Yo, Rob Harvilla from 60 Songs That Explain the 90s here to inform you that we are back with 30 more songs because the 90s were super long and had a ton of rad music. Please join us every Wednesday for more 60 Songs That Explain the 90s only on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Go beyond reality with new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea and discover a berry delicious world bursting with unexpected blackberry flavor. A world so full of refreshing blackberry iced tea that you may never want to leave. But there's always time to linger. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app. Just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another installment of The Pod Has Spoken. I am your forever host, Tyson Apostle. I played Survivor once, and now I talk about it almost every single week with my co-host, Riley McAtee. Riley, big news this week.
Yeah, what?
You went for a pretty long bike ride.
What? I went for a big hike. Too.
Oh, a big hike too. And then Yes. You found a diamond and put it on your then girlfriend, now fiance's finger.
That's right. We went to go look at some rocks in Yosemite, but I brought one with me.
Okay. And I mean, I hope this isn't prying too much. Is it a real diamond or a cubic zirconia?
No, it's a real diamond.
Okay. You heard it here first. Real diamond on Riley's fiance's finger. Congrats, Riley. How do you feel?
I feel great.
You have an extra glow. Like,
if people
are just listening, I just want to describe that your glow.
I hope it comes through, like through in the audio format too.
I think it does. Yeah, you're like a changed man.
Wow.
And this is exciting too, because you've been waiting for marriage. So really exciting stuff, Riley.
Yeah, me and Omar right there.
Okay. Well, I have another exciting announcement for you, Riley. We have one of my very good friends from the very first time I played Survivor. My dear friend and your hero, Coach Benjamin Wade. Coach, what's up, dude?
What's happening, everybody? Tyson, how you doing, my man?
I'm good. How are you?
So good. Lucky.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. And we had a firecracker of an episode, Riley. I have to say, it was pretty enjoyable. What do you think, Coach?
Unbelievable, man.
What about the season in general? How are you liking the season, Coach?
Yeah, you know, I think like with everybody, it takes a while to get adjusted to the twists and turns. Once you kind of settle in, it's like, man, I'm going at light speed right now. It's absolutely fantastic. The episode, what a mind bender. I mean, I'm loving this season. It's absolute top notch.
Yeah. I mean, there are some rolls of the dice here, even with production and from a viewer standpoint. For example, had Lindsay lost the do or die and just gone home, that would have taken out 3/4 of the drama of the episode. So the fact that she stuck in and then we got to see Tribal Council played out is really honestly what made the whole episode. Riley, can you imagine how boring that would have been if Lindsay would have just been like, oh, lost, see ya.
I know, they're really playing with fire, because I feel like that's going to happen when they do one of these do or die twists and it'll be completely anticlimactic. But in this episode, it worked.
It will. Well, let's start from the beginning. Night at camp, everyone's happy, high is gone, every single person. Romeo talks about hiding behind big egos. Coach, there's something to be said for that.
Gotta love big egos, man. I always play with mine. I think you play with yours. I like that, man. I actually love the best quote of the night was when Omar said that Mike is high on high. That was a great line right there. But you know, the big egos, you can either hide behind them or you can get out front and lead. You know which one I'm going to do.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Coach will take leadership role every single time. Even if it's not offered, a lot of times he'll try and get there. We also see, like, early on here that the amulet that has been, you know, toyed with a little bit, one third of it's already gone. So now Lindsay and Drea are both side-eyeing each other, like, how do I keep the amulet for myself only to increase its power to a full-blown immunity idol? And they both kind of are like playing it off like we're working together, but in their minds, we know what they want. They want all the power. And then Marianne says this thing. She also talks about the egos, but her thought is so clean and pure and clear here, where she says she feels safe because she's not a threat. But you have to be a threat to win votes at the end. Coach, where's the balance there?
Yeah, that's insightful. I mean, it depends on what you're trying to do. You know, all these twists and turns and a third of an advantage, or when does it become full advantage? That's above my pay grade, man. You know that. When I was playing with you, I just grabbed onto your coattails and said, teach me the wisdom of how to play this game with strategy, because I have none. So it kind of depends on you know, what is your play? What are you trying to take out of Survivor? Are you trying to win, or are you trying to be, you know, a big ego? So I think that there's a balance, but that's way over my head, man. I'll let the smarter people figure that out.
Riley, what's you thinking?
Well, I feel like Marianne, like, this is the tension that's at the core of Survivor, right? It's like how you get the people you needed voted out without it being so obvious that you put a target on your back.
But obvious enough that you can take credit for it at the end.
Right. And then when, especially when it's a final three too, where you're probably going to have to sit next to like another person who's a gamer. You know, it's not the final two era where maybe you could sit next to somebody who didn't play as much. But I feel like Marianne's a gamer too. Like, she's playing an impressive game.
She is playing really impressive. She's under the radar. She understands she's under the radar, and she understands the perception of everyone on her as her being under the radar. And that's a good spot to be in.
I have a question for you two related to Marianne. So you guys have played Survivor, I think, seven times between the two of you. How many toenails have you lost?
I've lost zero toenails. Coach?
None. A little bit of hair. No toenails, man. But you know what? Watching Marianne, it really reminds me a little bit of Sierra, but like a jovial, right? Like a jovial, happy Sierra. But I mean, like early on, I couldn't stand her. And I think as she's gone out there, you know, obviously she's mellowed a little bit, but also, you know, her talking strategy is actually really cool to see, because she says that very profound statement like you reference, and that was just coming out of the blue. You didn't see that coming. So it makes you, you know, have more respect for her as a character and a player.
And I think she's actually had quotes similar to this, like as far as being like very intelligent and observant of the game and what's happening around her. And I'm wondering, is she still as boisterous as she was in the beginning and we're just not seeing it? So like, is she getting on people's nerves? Because we're not seeing that anymore. Or has she toned it down and settled in and is a little tired now? And now, like, we're getting these just bits of wisdom from her. My thought process whenever I hear her speak and see her on the screen now is I'm like, that was really, really insightful. Is she getting on people's nerves still or not? Back to the toenail thing, though. On Blood versus Water, Katie, Tina's daughter, did lose some toenails. I think she,
more and than
she
one?
Was just like, I think so. I think my understanding is she was like, I'm losing toenails, and pulled it off and was like, ugh. And I was like, is that scurvy? Is that a sign of scurvy? You need some more vitamin C. I don't know what pirates dealt with when they couldn't get their citrus back in the day, but I think it is.
I don't know. I feel like that would make a lot of these challenges that they have really tough. Like maybe not the one this week, because they were kind of balancing on.
Oh, they were
like
balancing
the back of their feet. Yeah, they're balancing again. But like, yeah, there's so many of these challenges where it's like you're balancing. I think if you don't have toenails, it probably affects again.
On your mark, get set, hold as still as you can for as long as you can. Come on, guys. That's like three or four in a row now. What is going on? Anyways.
It's excessive.
So yeah, people losing toenails. I agree. It's weird. And the fact that Lindsay was like, wait, you lose some annually? Because she's like, I lose it a couple times a year. I was like, that's not correct.
Lindsay's a nutritionist too. And she was very like, no, this is wrong. Like, this shouldn't be happening to your body. You're missing something. So she probably know if it's scurvy or not.
Yeah. She probably needs more collagen or something. So as we're watching everything progress before the challenge, we're seeing that Romeo and Marianne are on the outs versus a fivesome of Jonathan, Lindsay, Drea, Mike, and Omar. And that's what we are led to believe for a little time, because everybody's annoyed with Romeo sneaking food, but not really sneaking food. But I love that they just show him constantly like cradled up next to the rice as it's cooling. And then he's like thinking he's being sneaky and scooping while there's voiceover from every single person on the cast talking about how he just sits there and sneaks rice. And then him talking about how he's being so sneaky. Listen, I know a thing or two about sneaking food on Survivor. You got to be sneakier than Romeo. You got to go about your business, move around, then in a real quick lunge for the food, pop some in your mouth, and then walk away.
You can't just sit by the rice all day.
You can't just sit by the rice side-eyeing it all day long.
Just scooping it. It's like, he's like openly like, yeah, just taking food.
Yeah, it's just like he doesn't care. And Coach, you ever sneak food on Survivor?
Man, I didn't sneak food. I was giving food away to my tribe, man, so that they were strong. But my funniest part of the Romeo thing was when he took that first bite and he had so much that it was actually dribbling off of his fingers down onto the ground, leaving evidence, man. He must have been scooping that up when the camera wasn't looking at it.
I thought so, too. I thought that, too. He dropped a huge chunk of rice and I was like, you're leaving a paper trail, bro.
Yeah. Or maybe he was just so gluttonous in that moment that he didn't care, man. It was just like,
you know how little food we get out there. If you see anybody, even if they dropped their portion of rice on the ground, what is your thought right there?
Yeah, man, you take it. If you saw something infested with maggots, man, you'd try to cook the maggots for extra protein. You'd be eating anything on the ground.
Yeah, like you should be eating that off the ground, but you should be so careful as to not drop anything on the ground because that's all you're getting. And so the fact that he's like not only sneaking food from what little they have, he's dribbling it on the ground as right. He's trying to sneak it. It's like, it's a big no-no. So we're led to believe that the five want Romeo because of that. But then Mike, who is high on high and is drunk with power, wants Drea. So he's like got this plan to go for Drea and tells everybody. And so now we're getting these two separate things. And Omar's like, it's crazy because high, Mike is now guilty of everything he was bugged about by high. And that is honestly the circle of life on Survivor.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You chop off the head of the dragon. You become the dragon, but you don't know it. And then someone chops your head off.
Ignorance is bliss in the meantime, but I think that's true, right? I mean, you're looking at so many great narrators of this season. I'm listening to Mike talk. And I'm thinking, man, he's such, you know, they always want to grab somebody. They grabbed you as a narrator. They grabbed me. They grabbed Cochran. You know, they grab these people each season that can help tell the story. And so Mike's telling a great story and the audience is like, you know, starting to switch on him. And of course, the best thing is really Mike just being really gullible, but then saying it with utmost sincerity. And man, you know, to tell you the truth, to be honest with you, he says that a lot, but a great, great narrator. Then Omar starts talking and then you're like, well, this guy also, he's narrating the season really well. That shift of power is constantly moving. And for those savvy enough to pick it up, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And you get these people that Mike thinks he's in a much more powerful position than he was now that High is gone. Omar recognizes that Mike feels that way. And so there you're having these different layers. It's forever swirling. So as Mike is getting on people's nerves for leading the charge, somebody else is going to step in that position. Omar's been quiet and safe and felt pretty good because he is recognizing not to get too power hungry, which may shift for him this week as Drea outed him as she exited the building. But we hear from Jonathan here right before the challenge, and it's a whole, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes of Jonathan talking about the food split, how weak he is. And I want to talk to you about, Coach, about this, is that Jonathan saying like he's much bigger than everybody, almost twice as big as some people out on the island.
As high as Romeo was in the foreground. And when he said that,
yes, awesome. Eating rice is so perfect. And He's only eating the same amount as everybody else. And that is the way Survivor works out there, is that you all get even amounts no matter your size, no matter what you're burning for energy, no matter what you're doing for the tribe. There's no way around it. If you eat one bite more than anybody else, everyone's recognizing that. Is there a way to change that?
I don't think there's ever a way to change that, because everybody's equally hungry, right? Nobody goes about, you know, I fast every day, 12 hours. I'm 18 sometimes. I'm not fasting 24.
Is that while you're sleeping?
After a monster workout in the evening, and then fast for all night so that all my fat can disappear. But anyway, okay. So part of it is, of course, luckily while I'm sleeping. But, you know, like some of us fast, but nobody's fasting for 48, you know, 72 hours. Nobody's doing that. And so everybody out there is equally starving. Everybody out there is equally fixated on food. And so as soon as somebody says that, if he would have said that to everybody else, you know, that would have been the death sentence for him. I think he's already, you know, marching that path anyway. But, you know, everybody's equally hungry. So you can't really do that without feeling like there's some discrimination for people that are larger, people that are skinnier. It's just a fact. It's always going to be there.
Yeah. Riley, as a viewer, what are your thoughts on that? Because I'm sympathizing with Jonathan, but I also, like Coach makes a great point, like everybody's feeling the same hungry probably.
Yeah. I kind of think that Jonathan's probably not like, he's like, oh, nobody sees how hard it is for me because I'm bigger and I'm hungrier. But it's like, I think that you're kind of not seeing how everyone is out there starving, right? It's not like people are getting their fill and he's like the bigger guy and he's got to eat more, which I'm sure is how it works outside of the island for him. He eats way more than other people. So, you know, a meal that would make other people full, like, would leave him hungry. But it's like nobody is getting like even close to the calories they need on the island. So I just don't think, I'm not really convinced that it's that much harder for him than others, especially when then he goes on to like win the immunity challenge today.
But I think the narrative was really leading up to, probably why it was such a long monologue, is because it's leading up to, is he going to win the challenge or not? You know, that's obviously he's so depleted that, you know, there's that arc, I think, leading up into the challenge. And of course, on the other side, you know, I feel bad for him when he was, you know, talking about that. I thought about, you know, how much weight we all lost out there, the muscle that I can never get back that flew away on that first season, man. I lost 8 inches of muscle on my chest. You know, I was a 42 jacket going in, suit jacket, because I wore that for all my coaching games. And then I came out, I was a 36. And that 8 inches of muscle, man, I've never been able to gain back. So on the one hand, you know, it's got to be equal. On the other hand, I was feeling for him. But at the end of the day, that's a creative arc leading into the challenge, which, man, that was a freaking awesome challenge.
How much could you bench press with that chest back then?
Man, 300, baby. 300. I got to tell you, man, the other day in the gym, I was working out with my son, documented, verified. Okay. Thought about calling Guinness the world record to come over and verify it. I finally bench pressed 235, man. I haven't bench pressed over 200 since Survivor. I'm not kidding you, man. I have not been able to get that muscle back, but I threw up a couple hundred pounds. I don't think I'll ever hit 300 again, man.
I've never bench pressed over 150 pounds, Coach.
And yet you're so much better than me in every single friggin' challenge. Goes to show you that bench pressing is overrated.
It's not a challenge. Maybe if they have a bench pressing challenge.
Yeah, then, once they have the, like, hold a boulder over your head for as long as possible challenge, then, Coach, you'll be right there next to Jonathan.
There you go.
We get this thing from Jonathan. Then he goes down to the beach, and they have that argument about the net. And Jonathan, his whole game plan, or part of his game plan anyways, was, I'm going to be the provider. Everybody will recognize that. That will curry some favor, win me some points. We've seen 42 seasons of this thing, Coach. How often is the provider rewarded for being the provider?
Never, ever. Maybe, you know, maybe they get through a couple of votes. We saw that with Richard Hatch. Yeah. I think it helps early on, you know. I did like the fact that Mike was still talking about Romeo not doing anything at camp. So there's always these pervasive ways that you can put somebody on the outs. One is work around camp or not doing that. One is being a provider. I think it gets you through a couple of episodes, but at the end of the day, you know, it really boils down to strategy and who you think you can beat in the immunity challenges and who you think you can trust and who you think you can stand up next to at the final tribal.
And this just popped into my head when you said that about Romeo and Mike saying that about Romeo. Everybody was saying that about Romeo, which leads me to believe he is a finalist. Mm. Everybody wants to be next to Romeo. If everybody is bugged by Romeo right now, he's a finalist. There's no way he's not a finalist at this point.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree.
So Jonathan and Drea get into it. Drea is like asking Jonathan for help. Jonathan's instructing, but not doing, which is always going to get on people's nerves. And then Jonathan is like, I know because I've had this little quarrel with Drea that I'm on her radar. Like, I just know. Like, anything at this point, which is observant, it's also like pretty standard. But a lot of people wouldn't think that, like, oh, I had a little quarrel with somebody, now I'm on their radar. They would be like, I'll fix this and we'll have no issue. But Jonathan's immediately like, Drea's out for me. I just know it. And then everything does shift towards Jonathan, or so it seems. And with that, we move into the immunity challenge. But this is a very special challenge, not only because it's the first time we've seen balance since last week in a challenge, but it's the do or die twist, which we had last season, the famous Monty Hall scenario. Riley, you don't like it?
No, I just think that Survivor should, as much as possible, end in actual vote outs, right? Because we said it at the top of the episode, that is like the core tension, is trying to get people to vote the way that you want them to. And so if we're going to lean toward more, it's like, oh, you lose a challenge and then you play a game of chance and then you go home. It's like, that's like a different game to me. That's just like not Survivor anymore.
Yeah. It's like a mix between the challenge and Survivor and probably a few other shows in between. So, Coach, are you aware of the Monty Hall mathematical problem here and what you should do in that moment?
Please enlighten me.
Okay.
So you're supposed to switch.
Supposed to switch. And mathematically, over the course of a large sample size, if you switch every time, then you have a 66% chance of winning. Because, and the way I've had it explained to me, is that every time Jeff is going to show you one of the death boxes, no matter if you choose death or life. So at that point, you have one versus two. And so there's a 66% chance that the winner is in this twosome. So you choose the one over here. He flips up one of the death ones. You still, those odds remain because you haven't seen anything in the boxes. So you have a 66% chance of winning by switching. What's crazy is that, well, we'll get to it as we get there. So it's the do or die twist, and you have the option to sit out the challenge and not run the risk of being last and having to play the do or die twist, or you can stay in the challenge. Coach, what are you doing in this moment? You see this challenge. You've played a very similar challenge. I don't know if you've played this exact one, but very, very similar.
Yeah, I mean, I sat out of a challenge once upon a time and stuffed my face with donuts, and another time with pizza. But I mean, you know, this is the kind of challenge. I mean, I don't like this at all, right? It's cool. They come up with new ideas. I don't think we're going to see this again. If we see it again, you know, I think it's not good, right? To have this kind of absolute luck. I mean, rocks is one thing, but this type of twist, I'm not a big fan of. But I think that what am I doing in that situation?
Are you playing or are you sitting out?
Yeah, it really depends, right? It depends on where I'm sitting in the game. It depends on if I think that I can actually win immunity. I would say I'm sitting out, actually.
Yeah, I think it only comes down to, can you win? If you don't think you can win, there's no reason to compete. That's the only thing that it comes down to, right, honestly. Right.
Or I guess if you think the writing's on the wall and you're going home no matter what anyways.
Yeah,
that'd be the other way.
Yes. So if you think that you are going home, or if you think you can win, those are the two reasons to play. Everybody else should sit out.
But at that point in the game, really nobody knows that they're going home. They think they might go home.
Right. But if you're feeling comfortable, like Marianne's feeling pretty comfortable, Romeo's feeling pretty comfortable, Omer's feeling pretty comfortable. So I think there's people that are feeling comfort. And then there's people that are knowing they can't probably win that versus Jonathan and Lindsay. And those are the other people sitting out.
I was really hoping they would all sit out and Jonathan would be the only one that would compete.
It almost happened, you know? And
it's close.
We get Jonathan versus Lindsay. Everybody else sits out, which to me was kind of shocking. There's usually a person there that's just like, I love to compete. But everybody realized the risk, realized that they were not strong in what was being asked of them. And we get this balance challenge coach. The new era of Survivor seems like it's mostly balance challenges.
I've noticed that. Yeah. I mean, I don't like it. It's like, you got to have, I feel like, you know, it's all been skewed to go against somebody just winning immunity after immunity. So it's just not all strength. It's not all endurance. We haven't seen a puzzle challenge, I think, for individual immunity. It's balanced stuff. So I think they're going maybe a little bit too much in that direction. But I will say this, I'm going to just kind of backtrack just a little bit. When you look, when you study cinematography and movie scoring behind specific scenes, I do this in my commercial music class every semester, and you play a scene without music, and then you play that same scene with the wrong kind of music, and then you play with the right kind of music, it makes that scene so much more dynamic. And watching the episode, I want you to go back, I want you to look at the challenge, and I want you to listen to the cinematic type movie scoring that's happening behind the scenes. I noticed it at Tribal. I noticed it. It's epic level stuff that whoever's writing, I know Russ Landau is no longer writing the scores for Survivor. My gosh, man, it made the challenge twice as exciting for me. Go back and listen to it. It was pretty epic.
I did recognize the music too when I, cause you can, it tells you the story. It foreshadows it right before it happens, where you get the music and you're like, okay, this is going to be a close call, but everybody's going to be fine. Okay. The music is now leading up where somebody's losing here in the next little bit. And then you don't know who, because the camera bounces back and forth. And I do agree with that. Like, you can make those moments, but when it's balanced every single time, it's like, there's other ways to keep it even without just making it balance every time. So Jonathan versus Lindsay, which is like probably the best outcome we could have had for this particular instant, because Jonathan and Lindsay have been the front runners in all of the balance challenges. We get them, they're going, they're shifting positions, it's hard. And Jeff talks about this monster again. He wants this monster thing to take on. I don't think anybody's talking about the monster anymore. After the beginning of last season, 41, where he was talking about the monster and we were all waiting for the monster and then the monster never came. Is the monster narrative on Survivor a thing or not?
I mean, I think the monster is really just in Jeff's pants when he looks at Jonathan and those big alpha males. That's really what I think is happening.
Ooh, shots fired. Riley, what is the monster here? What does Jeff want this monster to be?
I'm not going to be able to top coach's answer. Yeah, I don't know. It's Jeff. He likes to force a little, you know, little narrative or theme. And we don't have themes anymore. So Survivor 41 and 42, they get the monster.
Yeah, so he's getting himself a little bit more. You notice he's been a little bit more of a camera hog the last couple of seasons, you know, like, yeah. Talking when people are coming into the challenge. I mean, I didn't see it quite so much this week, but
it was there
last. No, I'm saying not that, but last week he was talking and we were watching the tribe coming. So he had like one shot at that. That's it.
Yeah.
And he said it and ended the end of his little monologue. And then they were right there. It was, I thought that was really cool timing, but he's definitely getting a little bit more, of the camera glory.
Yeah, he knows what the people want.
I think he could do a good job calling a football game or a basketball game or something. Just let him do it once. Yeah, I think so. He's great at the channel. I know that they edit it because it's not live, but you know, when he's doing it with people coming in, it's like, oh, maybe he does have the chops to do it live.
Yeah, but he has to also know football or basketball. Like, sure. You are assuming that he is familiar enough with those sports.
Yeah, let's find out. We'll find out if he's a sports fan. See,
I've done some commentating for bike racing and also pickleball. I am going to start doing more commentating for pickleball. And the thing that I've understood in doing that commentating is you have to know all of the people involved, their background, their current state. Like, those are the things you have to be familiar with. Something like basketball, where there's hundreds of players, like, and you need to know, like, okay, who are they? Where are they from? How do they play? Are they healthy? What is their history? What is their current state of performance? Like, all of those things go into making a good commentator.
Absolutely.
And so I think that like it takes years and years. So even though Jeff is great at this commentary, at these challenges with six people there that he's got to know pretty intimately over the course of a month, being able to call a game in the NBA or NFL is a different monster. Riley, it's a different monster.
I still think give him a chance, man.
You think you think you can't give that job to somebody else? You'd rather Jeff have that than you?
Well, I'd just like to hear Jeff do it just because it would be entertaining.
All right, fine. We'll line it up. I'll talk to Jeff's people and get him in touch with your people, Riley, and then we'll get him in touch with the NFL.
Great. Yep. That's exactly how this type of thing happens.
Okay. So the challenge, we go back. We think Jonathan's on the chopping block. Everybody's rooting against him secretly. Jonathan wins, which as a viewer, we always like to see the person who's on the chopping block win. But is that also editing magic? Coach?
I mean, he's obviously still strong, right? He's still got it. Oh my gosh, man. I mean, I'm not even on the show, man. I've been romancing with that guy from the very beginning. I was like, where's the Warriors Alliance now? I got to tell you something. Check this out. How many times have they said Warrior?
Oh, so
everybody's saying, everybody. Oh, I love it, man.
You started
I'm like,
that.
Ooh. That's what I'm talking about. So I just love that we still see that he's strong. You know, it's cool. We know that it's just a little bit of editing ipso facto that happens because he's still got it. But I got to say, Lindsay, oof, what a warrior. I mean, this is a freaking awesome cast. And when I listened to the Final Five talk, which was not the Final Five, but when I listened to the Final Five talk, I was just like, man, if I could just infiltrate into that alliance and have some warriors around me, it would remind me back to the pseudo Warriors Alliance that I formed with you. It's cool. Actually, Mike was also talking about, you know, giving some names to different people. And it's cool to see that come to fruition.
Yeah, it is. I think when we talk about the Warriors and we see Mike Andrea being like, it's who deserves it the most in the Final Five. We got to do this. That's a sales pitch for someone who thinks they can win against anybody. But if you're third or fourth in the Warriors Alliance, where you're realizing that you're not going to be able to beat a couple of these people, you're not sticking to that no matter what. Like that's, and that's why these, I just want to battle against the best competitors never works.
Never worked for me.
Yeah, I'm saying it can't work.
I was disappointed with Mike, though, because I felt like, you know, he gave that great speech and I'm a man of my word. And at the next scene when they're out of that Final Five, he's just like, oh, man, I was just saying that to make Drea feel comfortable. So Mike was really high on my list. He's still high, but he came down a notch.
Ooh, because of that
kind of you can't talk about a Warriors Alliance. Talk about this person who deserves it. And to be honest with you, that's a dead giveaway, man. I have people at work to say that. Anytime a colleague says, to be honest with you, I'm just like, that guy's word just went out the door.
Yeah, you can't preface something with, that's the first red flag in Survivor is anybody who says, to be honest with you, you know they're not being honest, Riley. To be honest with you, Riley, if anybody's saying, to be honest with you, before they say something to you, you know that what they're saying is not true.
Now I don't know what to think.
Yeah, it's layers, man. So Jonathan wins and Lindsay is filled with regret and she is like, I should have sat out. I know I should have sat out. My gut was telling me to sit out. Of course, hindsight is 20/20 at this point. Yeah, she should have sat out, but I still think that she could have won the challenge. She's clearly got the skill set to win that challenge. So I don't think it was an incorrect move. And then they do a flashback of her playing football in high school, I presume, and she played every single game, and she is like what Sarah Lucina wants to be. Lindsay's playing high school football. Riley, could Lindsay play in the NFL? You're our NFL guy.
I would imagine she'd probably have a tough time. I think the NFL is pretty tough.
I think we got to watch more highlight reels, though.
Dude, the NFL is so like, The high level of sports, I'm sure you know this, Tyson, it's crazy. Like my high school team went to the state championship game one year and the best players on that team couldn't even crack college rosters. It's like when, like the as you get up and up in sports, it is crazy how good they are. Like every single player you're seeing in the NFL is probably the best player that's ever come out of their hometown by like a huge margin.
Yeah, I was a collegiate swimmer.
Yeah,
and it is very, very, very rare when I come across someone who's a better swimmer than me. And I was not a top tier college swimmer. And then I was a pro cyclist.
The pro cyclists are like you're probably like top 1% of 1% of cyclists.
Yeah, for easily. But now I'm not because I don't ride bikes as much anymore. But still, like, it is. It's very competitive. And I do agree. Like, I still have, so I went and swam in college. I still have a high school swimming record at my high school.
Heyo!
25 Ooh. Years ago.
Wow.
Can I get an amen? Amen!
So, and I still, people will send me that from time to time. And they'll be like, hey, Tyson, just wanted you to know your record's still up here on the wall at the swimming pool. You have the oldest living record at the high school currently.
Well, speaking about cycling, I got a little side story about Tyson. He came out to see a symphony of mine decade ago, and he brought his bike with him. And so we're sitting around, and he was like, yeah, I'm just going to go for a little bike ride. And so he leaves, comes back a couple hours later. We were like, oh, where'd you go? Just thinking he went on a little 5-mile ride into town. He was like, oh, yeah, I went to this place out in the desert. Like, it was like 45 miles away. And all of us were just literally slack-jawed. We're like, wait, you went all the way out to Milford? He's, oh, yeah, I went all the way out there. He wasn't even tired. I was just like, man, this guy's a freaking champ. This is why I love this guy so much.
Yeah, Riley, tell all your friends.
Okay.
Okay, good. Sure. then it's known. I'm a champ. Thank you, Coach, for that hype up. Drea talks about the amulet, and she's hoping Lindsay goes home, but she can't voice it. But, like, who wouldn't be thinking that same thing, right? It's so obvious. Like, in Survivor, I think you get a three-way shared thing that becomes more powerful if there's less people involved. All three of those people's goal is to get rid of the other two. It would be silly to do anything differently. And then we see Mike putting in work and telling Drea it's Romeo and then putting everyone else on Drea. And at this point, I'm thinking Mike is gone. There is no, he's directing the entire thing and everybody's just like, uh-huh, Mike, we're with you. And then we get this thing where Drea has a weird vibe, which is so, I think, such a good read of hers. Like people are acting different. People are going and having conversations. She's recognizing all of this. And then she tells Omer about her knowledge is power advantage where she can take Mike's idol. And I think this is her slip up right here. Obviously, in hindsight, it's her slip up. But why does she need to tell anybody this?
It's right there in like it's right in the name of the advantage, too. Knowledge is power. Once you tell Omer about the advantage, he now has the power to you know, switch around where Mike's idol is. This is the same thing that happened to Liana last season. She told the wrong people. Keep that to yourself and you will have the power.
Anybody who, like, she has the knowledge is power advantage. But then at this point, she's like, I have to take Mike's thing. You have to weigh now. Like, telling somebody and telling the right person could lock them in as an ally for a deep run. But the issue here is what Drea has to herself think about is, to Omer, am I more dangerous than Mike? If so, I can't tell Omer about this in this moment. Like, those are, I think, some of the things you have to weigh when you're sharing knowledge, because knowledge is power. But if you share it in the right moment to the right person, that's where you get a lot of power from it. And she was thinking Omer was this person. He was not, because he immediately tells Lindsay. And then he contemplates, after Lindsay tells him, he contemplates telling Mike, taking the idol from Mike so that it's somewhere else, and then voting out Drea, or voting out Mike at that point. Like, Coach, in this instant, you're Omer. You have all this information. You're taking the idol, obviously, like that's the most powerful thing to do. But then who are you voting out? Are you voting out Dre or are you voting out Mike? Because my perspective, I would vote out Mike so that I don't have to fight about whose idol it is after tribal council.
I mean, that's a point, but either way, you're screwed, right? I mean, either way, you got to come back and face the music and see what's going to happen. If you,
yeah, that's true.
You know, because if you're
going to be pissed too, huh?
You're going to burn bridges either way. Absolutely. Yeah.
Is this bad for Omer?
That's a good point. You know, you alluded to this earlier. You said, you know, Drea, that was a magnificent ending. Even Probst said, we've never seen anything like this before. But she just puts absolutely everybody on blast. And it's going to be interesting to see whose game she blew up, whose game she helped.
Let's talk about that blasting right now, because everybody, I don't know if everybody, I just assume, because in my brain, I'm thinking about that. I'm like, if I get voted out, I'm putting people on blast. I'm blasting people. I'm blasting them. And then you don't understand that it's maybe you. And then you start seeing the votes. You're like, oh, it is me. Play it cool. And in that moment, all of that goes out the window, because you're like, I just want to get out of here real quick and like dip my head and go. And the fact that Drea held it all together enough and actually bought herself a lot of time by giving hugs and saying goodbye and doing all that stuff, she blasted a lot of people. She gave Mike the kiss of death by saying if he got to the end, he was going to win. She told everyone that Omer was the only person she told about her knowledge is power thing. So he's obviously untrustworthy. Did she put anybody else on blast? I mean, she told Jonathan she was never out to get him, even though he was out to get her. And what else do we have there?
She was just like, Marianne, you keep being you. And I think she told Romeo that he's on the block every time, which is probably not new information for anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that, you know, obviously the kiss of death for Mike, he's not going to win this game. Like he's not getting to the end.
I was on Blood versus Water very early in the game at a challenge. Cameras were probably rolling somewhere, but it was not a non-camera moment. Jeff was standing with my tribe after telling us about what to do in the challenge. And Aris said, Jeff, you've told people I'm the most boring winner ever. And, you know, and so Jeff kind of responded. And then for some reason, somebody was like, go around and do all of us right now. And Jeff went around and was like, so-and-so is this, so-and-so is this. Aris, most boring winner ever. Tyson could win this game if he focuses for a second. And I ended up winning that season. But at that moment when he said that, I was like, Jeff just gave me the kiss of death. Like the host of the show gave me the kiss of death here on the show, which felt great, but also felt terrible. But I did end up winning. So the kiss of death doesn't always mean that there's no hope, because do people believe that?
Jeff's not on the jury. You know, Drea now is. So I feel like it's a different kiss of death when it's coming from somebody who's like, hey, I'm going to basically go campaign for Mike, and I'm sort of like telegraphing who I might vote for in the end.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. But so do you think she did that negatively or positively for Mike?
Negatively. Yeah, because I mean, it was those two against each other. You know, she's just feeling that burn of being voted out and feeling like Mike orchestrated, even though he didn't. But, you know, I think Omar, even though she did, you know, take the blinders off so that the trust maybe was not there, I think it hurt his game. But I still think he's been a fantastic manipulator, and he's been my pick to win it for a couple of weeks now. I think it hurt his game, but I think he can overcome it. He's sly, man.
Hurt his game because it benefited the people sitting there. So everybody that's sitting there, even though Drea was like, Omer lied to me, it's like, yeah, but that thing that you told him, he told us, so he was truthful to us. Like that's
and
the
he
argument.
He gets the credit now.
Yeah. He gets the credit, but also the people, like, if Omer had come to me and been like, yo, Drea has this knowledge of power thing, and then Drea's like, yo, Omer's the only person I told. And then I was like, oh, and Omer told me about that. That means he trusts me. And like, that doesn't ruin my relationship with Omer at all. Like, I'm looking at that and being like, yeah, because he wanted you gone, but I knew because Omer told me. So I'm still with Omer because he told me the truth, even though he lied to you. So I don't think it, for Omer, I don't think it's necessarily a burn. For Mike, it's definitely a kiss of death there. So we're in tribal, just to backtrack a little bit there. And we see that we get the takes on the head nods from Mike, which I totally agree with. Like, there's the head nod, like, we're looking across from each other. I'm giving you a subtle, like, winky nod, like, everything's okay. Or there's the get over here to the well nod. We have to talk right now. And the well is famously the place to talk strategy. But I think returning players will not use the well to talk strategy as often or very often or should not. Winners at War, I started avoiding the well at all costs. And I would just sit in the shelter and wait for information to come to me. And it's definitely less suspicious. If you're going to the well, you're a suspect. Major sus.
Absolutely. You know, speaking about head nods reminds me of one of the most infamous head nods in Survivor history when we slayed the dragon. And it was coming down to the final votes, and you and I looked at each other. We were like, gave the little nod, and I was like, oh man, this is going just like I wanted it to do. Anyway, but as far as, like, you know, strategizing the well, I mean, you become paranoid out there. You remember when in Heroes and Villains, freaking Russell Hantz storming up and down the beach. I mean, I felt like I couldn't have a conversation with anybody just about the weather because he was going to come over and interrogate you. So everybody's on high alert. Everybody's paranoid. You know, I think, you know, Drea was really savvy when she was like, I'm watching this person, I'm watching this person, seeing who talks to who gets firewood. That was actually really cool. And I bet just that little few sentences is going to have a lasting impact on future players that are going to start observing if people are actually coming back with wood and if people are coming back with half full or empty water bottles.
Well, I also think that might have actually hurt her because people are like, ooh, she's really observant. She sees what's going on. And maybe even if it wasn't that exact moment, maybe it was something similar leading up to her vote out that sealed the deal for her, where they're like, she sees what's going on. She's understanding it. She's scary versus maybe someone like Mike, who his perception is not always correct. And that's somebody you want in the game. And so I thought that too. And I think returning players are more aware of that quite early on. Like, who's going to the well? Who's actually bringing back full waters? How long does it take to be at the well to fill up water? If it's taking them longer than any amount of time, then they're talking to somebody about something. And firewood, who's out looking for firewood? Who's actually looking for idols? Who's out chit-chatting? Like, all of that. Even fishing. Like, who's out fishing? Are people fishing together? Let's see who it is. And that's how you start piecing together who's with who and what game is being played and how often you are involved, or at least someone from those conversations comes and follows up with you about what happened.
Is that what returning players are thinking about? Because I was thinking about the sunset angle of the background and where
to stand. I swear, man.
I was like thinking, man, would this corner of the beach look really good for the backdrop of my coachy or what? I wasn't thinking about any of that stuff, man. That's why I haven't won and you have.
Dude. But your moments are much more cinematic than mine.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know, man. That Winners at War, whew, you had some absolutely epic cinematic moments.
Okay, I'll take it. I appreciate you, Coach.
Always got your back, man. From day one, baby.
I mean, Omer talks about it being the most paranoid people he's ever seen, which is crazy in this moment, because I thought about that all day long while I'm watching this, all of this unravel and everybody's paranoia. But there's a chance Lindsay could go home and all of this paranoia is for naught. And in that case, why get all paranoid and riled up? Because all of that information being passed around that day, if Lindsay ends up, you know, drawing the wrong thing and going home, that information is now being leaked throughout the tribe over the next handful of days till the next vote out. So in those moments of mass paranoia, you need to keep your chatter to a minimum and collect information without giving information. Coach, agree or disagree?
No, I agree. Absolutely, I agree. I tend to give out more information than I receive, but that's just me.
Well, we need you. We need players like you too. That's how I get information. But no, it is. And yeah, so I'm watching all of it play out, I'm like, everybody's riled up too much. Sure, you got to come up with a plan B if Lindsay doesn't go home, but at what cost? Riley.
But that, see, like, that's kind of, maybe that's part of the paranoia, though, is that you have to make this plan B, but you also know you don't get to, like, cut the person and just be done with it. It's like there's a chance that it's Lindsay going home, and now that information leaks, and they know, you know, someone finds out who you were targeting, but, you know, so.
So you're making a good argument now for the do or die twist to be back, Riley.
No, you. No.
Riley, stop
no,
it.
No, no. I'm firmly anti do or die. Let's be clear.
And okay. Jonathan, in his position of power, saying he's getting more info from more people because people recognize he's in this little position of power. And I think that's correct. I also think it's a time where you can push a little bit more, put a little more pressure on people to do the thing you want. And Drea says she plays every day like it's her last day on Survivor. Coach, is that a way to play the game? I think it's not. I think if you're playing every day like it's your last day, people are going to get very scared of you. If you're pulling out every stop to protect yourself, every single tribal council, people are going to be like, this guy, like, there's, it's impossible to do.
Right. I agree. I mean, at the beginning of this episode, I actually thought, you know, Drea's a shoe-in for the final three. She's got advantages upon advantages, and you can see where the paranoia got her. Also, you know, just general satisfaction. Like, are you enjoying yourself out there? I know that those moments are few and far between, but you got to enjoy the journey out there. And if you're looking behind your back, thinking it's your last day every single time, that doesn't seem like the way to play it to me, both on a strategic level and also on a personal level.
I agree. I think both ways, because it's going to rile your paranoia up, but it's also going to make everyone paranoid of you because they don't fully know what you're capable of doing or what you're going to do. I think you need to save those moments like it's your last day when you really do believe it's probably your last day, which is actually how Drea did end up playing it.
This episode is brought to you by Pure Leaf Iced Tea. Go beyond reality with new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea and discover a berry delicious world bursting with unexpected blackberry flavor. A world so full of refreshing blackberry iced tea that you may never want to leave. But there's always time to linger. Try new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea. Visit amazon.com/pureleaf and enter 20 Pure Leaf for 20% off your purchase of new Pure Leaf Blackberry Iced Tea.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
In the last couple things that we get before we go to the do or die is Mike talking about stuff you say being misinterpreted. Totally agree. Like, people can also misconstrue what you say on purpose for their advantage. And that's why being as silent as you can in those moments and giving up just the right amount of information and not the full information is key and necessary. Because anything more than that, now you're having to do some damage control, which will lead to then you having to keep your story straight.
Absolutely. People misconstrue what you say. They can just make up stuff that allegedly you said as well, just like Hai. That was why Hai left. So,
and then Omar reacts by saying, you know, you need to know when to stop talking. And that's fully true. And I think that the best place to start is by not talking. and then gauging which information to give to who. So with that, we go to the do or die. Lindsay Riley. Lindsay does the same exact thing that Deshaun did last season. She plays it mathematically incorrect, but still stays.
I know.
Last season, Deshaun played it identical. He chose a box. He stuck with the box. He had a 33% chance of winning and stayed. This time, Lindsay plays identical, has a 33% chance of staying, and also stays. I know the sample size is small and whatever, but Riley, with our sample size on Survivor, the box you pick first has 100% chance of survival.
I'm starting to think that maybe Jeff tips him off a little bit. There's some kind of tell. One of those boxes might look a little different. You know, he's got to know which one has the fire in it too, because man, so the chances of that all happening, it's 1 in 9. That's not impossible. You know, 1 in 9, that could happen. But next season, Tyson, if they bring this back and somebody picks and sticks and gets it right, oh, I'm going to go ballistic.
You are? You're going to lose your mind?
I'm going to lose my mind if that happens. That cannot be legit.
Man, it's a tough spot. It's a tough spot, coach. What are you doing there? You're choosing a box and then are you switching? Now that I know that mathematically it makes sense to switch and you're supposed to switch, I would. But in that moment, I'm sticking with my choice. Because if you swap it and you end up being wrong, that's a huge amount of regret versus sticking with it and being like, ah, well, my gut led me astray.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be regret no matter what, right?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we've all been created with this sixth sense inside of us. Some of us pay attention to it. Others don't. Obviously, the last two people that played that little mini game within the game trusted their gut and they stuck with it. For me,
and you think it's like a mother's intuition style of thing, like a sixth sense?
I think it's a father's intuition.
Okay.
No, just kidding. Wait, it was a father's intuition last time. Female intuition this time. You're screwed either way, man. I mean, literally, like, if you switch it, but now that you said that, I didn't know any of that before you enlightened
yes,
me on that.
Correct.
If you switch, you've got whatever, 60, what'd you say, 66%?
Yes.
So probably I'm switching.
Now
just because you said that, right?
Yeah. If I didn't
screw
know
screw your
that,
gut. Yeah. Screw
you
your gut.
You have to play mathematical.
My gut has mathematically been incorrect on Survivor 100 days. The only thing I ever did correct is on Survivor was befriending you the first day, man. After that, it was all downhill.
That was your peak? I disagree. You've had some great runs and some great moments. So Lindsay gets it. She wins. She stays in. And in this moment, her quote is, "I love Survivor. This is awesome." Riley, is that the quote she would have given had she been dead?
I can't imagine it. I can't imagine that she would have been as happy as Drea was going home either. I feel like she would have been a little more upset.
Yeah. So getting through this tribal council, Drea plays the knowledge is power on Mike to take his idol. He doesn't have it. He's given it to Omar. We have a flashback of that, which we kind of suspected. And it makes the most sense for Omar to try and get the idol versus letting Drea take it. There's no reason where I don't think there's any situation where Omar's going to let Drea take the idol over him convincing Mike to give it to him. Coach, is there, can you think of an instant where Omar would just let Drea take that idol?
I don't know. I can't see that happening whatsoever.
Yeah. And I think Omar's only mistake was that he gave a bunch of information to Lindsay. So now at least Lindsay knows he has an idol. Mike also knows he has an idol, and now that's going to be tricky for him to navigate.
Yeah, that scene struck me also as odd. You know, you tell only the people that need to know, and most people don't need to know squat, but you only tell a few people. And so when he told her that, I didn't really see the play in that, why he did that. That was his, like you said, that was kind of his only mistake.
Yeah. And so
but maybe he's thinking steps down the road where he's trying to get her trust, because his next step in this chess game that he's playing, we don't even see. He might be looking two steps ahead.
Yeah, but at some point, especially as you're getting close to the final, it's hard to think that many steps ahead. At this point, you have to be like, get through everything individually. So maybe, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be tricky. It'll be fun to watch him navigate, but I think this is definitely the most exposed he has been. And Drea uses her extra vote to vote towards Mike because she's already puzzled and she's already like, okay, it's probably me. And Drea is gone. It comes down to 3-3. If you're Mike, you've got to be like on high alert at this moment, right? Like, you know now as Mike who's kind of against you. Or if it was split and you didn't know that it was happening, you have to assume that everybody's against you to a certain degree. And so Drea goes, and I think that last week we were very positive about High's exit. He was very upbeat about it. Drea is like next level upbeat about it. She's giving everyone hugs. She's laughing with Mike about throwing two votes on him. She's high-fiving, and then she gives her closing words to everybody, and then Jeff lets her say the tribe has spoken. He snuffs the torch, and she leaves, and Jeff is like, it's just a game, and it's just an adventure, and he loves the camaraderie. I personally, in that moment, if I'm Drea, I'm pissed. Like, it's a game for a million. Sure, it's a game and it's an adventure, but it's for $1 million prize.
And she had so much stuff too. Like, she was so well positioned. It's not like she was on the bottom. She wasn't drawing dead. She had a real chance to win.
Yeah. And I'm not saying Drea should be pissed. I'm saying there's validation for people to be pissed. Jeff saying it's just a game and it's just an adventure, that's minimizing the life changing amount of money you can win from the show.
All I could think about was, where the heck are my hugs like that, man? I never got a hug like that on Survivor. In that moment, I'm like, come on, man. There's never any love when I'm out there. It's just a bunch of hate when I'm trying to give people hugs. It's funny, Tyson, you said that one time. You were like, dude, please never give anybody a hug
after you vote voted out.
If you play again, don't ever give anybody hugs.
I still maintain that that's the reason you lost that season, is because you tried to give people that you spearheaded their ouster, you tried to give them hugs when they were the most heated. And I think that that rubbed people the wrong way. I don't know if that's, from my perception watching the season, nobody wanted that hug from you after you were like, sorry, it just had to be. Let me stand up and give you a hug. And they were like, no, you're the one that spearheaded this whole thing. It's your fault. The best thing you could have done is sat there and not made eye contact with them, coach. But it's tricky, like, because some people maybe do appreciate, like, hey, sorry, that's just the way it had to be. But it seemed on that season, most people.
I don't think anybody's ever appreciated me trying to give them a hug on the way out, man. No, it's just me. It speaks to the difference of why I can never win the game ever. It also is the one thing that confounds me about human nature. When I can say the exact same thing as Tyson Apostle, and Tyson will be, we love you, man. And out of the other side of their mouth, they're saying, what the frick's wrong with Coach, man? He's a complete jerk off. I'll never understand that, man.
Well, it's all in the delivery.
I don't know, man. I got to work on my delivery.
And also, if I had spearheaded somebody's ejection from the game or elimination, I'm not hugging them. Like, they're pissed. I'm not hugging them. They're mad at me. They know that it was me. I'm not hugging them. Like, that's, yeah. Even like somebody that I love that had to go because they were going to win. If I didn't, I'm not going to hug them.
I'll remember that.
Yeah.
I'll take some notes.
I think. Anything else before we close the breakdown here?
No, I think we hit most everything.
We hit everything, probably, and more. And before we end our broadcast, Riley, we've got the Survivor Superlatives. Coach, this is where we choose our best and worst and favorite and least favorite and everything in between. Riley, what do we have first?
All right, let's do best move. Tyson, you got one?
Oh, you're going to me first? Yeah. Best move, honestly, I mean, I think Omer taking the idol was the best move, but I think it's also the worst move in that too many people know about it, and he left Mike in the game. If he would have just told, I think he needed to just get rid of Mike. keep it clean. Because now he has to give the idol back to Mike. Now what? Now he votes Mike out? Like, what is the plan from here? So I think best move was doing that for sure, because he doesn't want to give Drea the idol. But then he needs to get rid of Mike so he can keep the idol and keep it cleanly. But then I guess Drea is coming back and she's mad at Omer too. So like it's not a good move, honestly. Like he's burned somebody.
You talked yourself out of it.
Yeah, he burned somebody so hard. He burned both people so hard. Unless he gives the idol back to Mike, that's his only play now. I think he's the only play now. So, and then get rid of Mike after that. So, yeah, it's a good play. I think you don't want Drea having the idol.
Coach, what do you think was the best move?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the best move, because you're talking about taking the easy way out and finding a way to navigate where it's not the easy way out. It was a very intricate and difficult way out. You got to respect that. You got to build up resume points by doing that.
Yeah, I agree. I think this was the best move of the episode. Yeah. All right, let's flip it. Let's do worst move. Either you two have something that stands out, really poor move from this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously Mike is power hungry.
Just his gameplay in general. Yeah.
Yeah, his gameplay in general. A really bad, bad move. No, not necessarily, other than I think Omer is getting a little more messy than he needs to be, but maybe he's locking Lindsay in by giving her information that she didn't necessarily have to know in that moment. And she was the one that we're seeing on screen that came up with the idea for Omer to take the idol from Mike anyway. So maybe she ended up actually helping him or making him a bigger target. So maybe Lindsay's move right there to tell Omer to take Mike's idol was the best move. But I still think worst move is that Omer has a lot of cleaning up to do with somebody, or he's got to just give the idol back and hope that people don't see him as a mastermind.
I got two worst moves. I think one was Mike sitting around talking about, you know, how we're going to play with warriors and, you know, a little bit of honor, and then immediately going and telling members of the Alliance, oh, I'm just saying that to make them feel comfortable. The second wrong move wasn't really a move. It was just an attitude shift, right, with Jonathan. There's been so many times this season where I've thought, wow, what a gentleman, by just turning the other cheek when people are chatting absolute nonsense around him. And so for him to just do that little slip up, he's already on the chopping block, right? But to do that little slip up and have his temper show through, he's done such a masterful job. I was disappointed in that moment.
Yeah, it was. That's the nature of the game. That's the design of the monster, is that they're starving. They're sleep deprived. They're with a bunch of personalities they probably don't want to be surrounded with 24/7. It's designed specifically for that to come out when you're at your lowest emotionally and mentally and physically. That's when we get to see the person who is all the way buried deep down inside you that maybe you never ever see other than in this moment. And that's, I think, the true test of somebody who can win this game, is someone who can hold it all together and still be self-aware enough in those moments to play nice.
You had me all the way. I was like, boy, that's me right there, until you said self-aware. And then that kicked it out the window.
Riley, what else we got? Or do I need to? No, I already came up with one.
Yeah, you do. I think my worst move is Drea telling Omer about knowledge is power, which she kept to herself. Just,
yes.
We've talked about that on this pod a few times.
I'd like to switch mine to yours, Riley.
Okay. We'll officially mark that down for when we go back over these later. All right. Favorite moment of the episode?
Favorite moment of the episode, I think, is honestly, I think the knowledge is power played out perfectly for this episode to work the way that it did. Like, we had Jonathan versus Lindsay in the challenge. We had Lindsay lose. We had Jonathan win, who was supposedly on the chopping block. And then we had Lindsay stay in the game with her selection in the mathematically incorrect way. All of that was just like chef's kiss. If it would have gone any other direction at any step there, it would not have been as beautiful.
I think, you know, I like the knowledge is power. steps leading up to that. I agree. When you're on the cusp of knowledge, it's like staring into the abyss. The problem with staring into the abyss is that the abyss begins to stare back at you. Nietzsche couldn't end this podcast without throwing a little Nietzsche in there. But actually, my favorite moment was Mike is high on high. I freaking love that. I actually laughed out loud when he said that.
I'm going to go with the whole Drea, just Drea's going home, basically, and how upbeat she was, and her putting two votes on Mike and her whole personality shining through there. I hope we get to see more of Drea someday.
Yeah. Are we seeing more of Drea, Coach? She's coming back?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She's coming back. Mike's coming back.
Marianne's coming back. Jonathan's coming back, maybe.
I think a lot of people from this cast could come back. This is a stellar cast, I think.
Omer. Yeah, there's a lot of people that could come back.
All right, let's do winner picks. Coach, you kind of had yours earlier.
Yeah, I think Omar's going to win.
I think Marianne.
I'm also picking Marianne. Yeah, I think Omer's too. He's like Omer's too visible exposed right now. Yeah,
he's exposed. He's exposed too early. That's what I'm saying.
But he'd be like my next choice.
I've said this time and time again. You're driving this giant bus with all these people on it. They trust you to drive it. They don't know that you're driving it. Maybe they're just along for the ride. They think they're driving. The wheels start rattling. The brakes are going out. The wheels are falling off. And you want to time it that the entire thing disintegrates as you cross the finish line. And Omer may have this thing falling apart a little too early.
I agree. All right. Final superlative is who's getting voted out next.
I think Jonathan, but just to be different, I'll say Mike.
I'm going to say Mike too. I think Omer will give the idol back, but then I think they'll blindside him anyways.
Yeah, that could be actually. Okay, yeah. I don't disagree with you guys, and I feel like a little bit ashamed of all of my choices this week, but I'm going to stick by them. Again, congratulations, Riley, on being engaged to the love of your life. Thank you. I'm assuming that was presumptuous of me.
And you're correct. You said correctly.
Coach, I want to thank you so much for being here. It's been awesome. Lovely to catch up and see you. We got to do this more often. Where can people find you? Should they be finding you? Are you on social media? Can we get cameos from you? What do you do on your cameos? You're playing trumpet, right?
I'm going to tell you right now, Tyson, nobody beats a Coach cameo, man. They are freaking awesome.
They are awesome.
I've done so many cameos, man. It's awesome. You can find me on Cameo, Dragon Slayer Coach on Instagram. Twitter's going the way of all flesh and the way of the dodo with Musk taking over, but you can still find me on Twitter, the_real_coach. But come find me. I'll always love to interact with the fans out there. They're what's made us, given us our platforms today.
Yep, that's true. Thank you to everyone listening. We will be back next week. And again, yeah, let us know if we're missing something or your take, because we always love to hear from the fans and the listeners. And with that, we are out of here.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.